and fly. I spell it ill. I say buh-buh-buh-buh, and it's just because I'm a human fly, and I don't know why. I got 96 tears.
Hey there, High Flyers, and welcome to an exciting episode of the Death Defying Human Flycast. Today we are joined by a very, very special guest, Kai Michelson. Kai is the owner of Rocket Man Parachutes, the holder of several world records, and a world-renowned stunt engineer. And more specifically for us, he is the designer of the rocket cycle the human fly used in his record-breaking bus jump in 1977. Kai, thank you so much for being here today.
Hey, thanks a lot for having me out here, Max. It's going to be interesting, that's for sure.
So, first of all, tell me a little bit about your career. You started young, and you're still doing it now.
Yeah, I started out racing motorcycles like when I was 15 years old, and that led into dragsters, and then I started building rocket-powered cars, and we set like 72 state, national speed records. Oh, wow. Got involved in the film business, and I've worked in about 200 movies, television shows, commercials through the years, and consequently, I meet a lot of really interesting people. But probably my biggest claim to fame is we're the first civilians to actually build and launch a rocket and put it in the space. We're the very first civilians to get licensed by the federal government before anybody. So that's pretty cool.
Before we started recording, you said that you've done that twice.
Yeah, we've done it twice, 2004 and 2014. Our highest altitude is 73 miles up, 3,580 miles an hour. And we recovered both of those rockets also.
Oh, wow. Is that how you started developing parachutes?
No, it was far before that. Actually, back in the late 60s, I started making parachutes. And they were putting them on rocket cars and stuff like that, yes.
Right. So how did that come about? How did you start making rocket cars and rocket cycles? And I think you made rocket skates, is that right?
Yeah. It started out when I was, about 13 years old. I got a Gilbert chemistry set for Christmas. Uh-huh. And nowadays they teach you how to make, boring things like disappearing ink. But back then they taught you how to make black powder, and they had all the chemicals in it to do that. And the funny part about that is my mother went down to the drugstore, and if my son comes down and needs any chemicals for his chemistry set, it's all right. Well, I lived in a neighborhood with like 30 kids, and we started out basically with firecrackers, bombs to rockets. And that's kind of how it all came about. Wow. And it spun off. I built a rocket-powered motorcycle. I brought it to the Union Grove, and I was pulling up to the line, and consequently, a guy says, "And here comes Rocket Man." And so, hence Rocket Man. That was back in the 60s. I set my first world record in a rocket in 1970 in a rocket-powered snowmobile. And then we started chasing after records, and then I came up with the harebrained idea of trying to set a land speed record in every state in the United States on drag strips. And we did big promotional things all around the country, did that for many years. And, consequently, we set 72 state, national speed records. But in the stunt business, I think we hold pretty close to 30 records in the stunt business.
Oh, wow.
So I meet a lot of cool and sometimes really strange people.
I bet you do. And we're going to talk about one of those people.
I am a magnet for strange people.
Well, so how did that, I can see where that kind of folded into working with stuntmen and daredevils and that sort of thing. Is that, did people start coming to you?
Yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah. But I was also blessed to work with the two best, Kitty O'Neill, top stunt, that woman. She was Wonder Woman's double. Her life story, you can find it on Silent Victory. And Dar Robinson, I worked with Dar, and we did like 17 segments for That's Incredible. I worked in just about every stunt special at one time for a period of time. I worked in many stunt specials. So they would bring me in to coordinate or to build the equipment or to do stunt work,
I saw also that you worked on, you've mentioned that you worked on probably hundreds of movies. And you did some of my favorites. You did Smoking the Bandit. You were on, you were helped on Hooper, which is a personal favorite of mine. All sorts of films in the 70s.
Well, I did some, built some car stuff for those guys. Yeah. But I worked on a couple of, Burt Reynolds movies, Stick and, Stick and Sharky's Machine. I worked on those, on the set. I was on the set for those. Yes.
Right. So were the 70s kind of a heyday for daredevils and stunts? And that's the way
there's a thing like in the 30s, and it comes and goes, stunt stuff. I mean, Daredevil stuff. There's a lot of difference between stunts and Daredevils. A lot, big right. difference. And it comes in spurts. It seems like that way, yes. But back in the 70s, there was a lot of crazy stuff on. I started right. a booking agent, and I started bringing guys in like Boom Boom Benny, the guys that blow himself up with dynamite, and professional right. motorcycle jumpers, and guys who jump snowmobiles and crash this, and light themselves on fire. So I had this whole catalog of crazy stuff that I would book into tracks around the country. It was a little sideline thing I did.
Yeah, well, that must have been fun for you, though.
Well, yeah, I've seen a lot of fun.
It was the 70s, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So that gets me to the Human Fly, who you built the rocket cycle that he used for his 1977 bus jump.
Yes, right? Yes, I did.
So how did that happen? Who approached who?
Okay, so I was out at Kitty O'Neill's house out in California, and I got a call from a guy who introduced himself as the Human Fly. And I says, well, I can't say as I ever heard of you before. Mm-hmm. And he just went off. You mean you've never heard of the Human Fly? You know, I'm the world's greatest stuntman. The majority of my body is made out of steel. And I mean, I run into characters all the time. And I was kind of really busy, and I was really wrapped up in a film project we were working on. And I said, you know, I really don't have time to talk to you, but I'll be back in Minnesota. I'll give you my telephone number, and you can call me then. Mm. Well, I get back to Minnesota. There's a guy knocking on my door. Oh, by the way, during this conversation, he was telling me that he was twice as good as Evel Knievel, and he wanted to build a motorcycle that would jump over 36 buses. And I asked him how far he had to accelerate and how far he had to stop. And I says, guess what? You're going to die. And he says, why did the Human Fly? And I says, you're going to have to be leaving that ramp at a certain speed, and you're going to have to stop, and that building is not big enough to do it. So anyways, I get back to Minnesota. Bang, bang at my door. Here's a guy that claimed to be the Human Fly's engineer. And I have the drawings and everything that he brought here and the layout of the place he was going to jump. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, if we cut that in half, there's a good chance we're not going to kill him, but he's still going to crash. And we'll catch him in a net and a bag on the other side, an airbag. But I says, other than that, there's no chance that he's not going to crash, because there's a real good chance of that. Right. So they gave half down on the motorcycle with the agreement that I would fly into Montreal, and then they would give me the rest of the money. So that's how the program went. Meanwhile, I'm building the motorcycle, and I'm also working on a project for Lee Taylor, a rocket-powered boat. And I get a call from an insurance company, and the insurance company says, boy, Michelson, you're sure bringing us some business. I says, well, what do you mean by that? Says, well, Lee Taylor's organization just took $1 million life insurance policy on Lee, and the Human Fly just took $1 million policy on the Human Fly product. They asked me if I knew who they were, and I says, no, I don't know anything about them at all. Well, mm-hmm. I had a contract, which I still have, and in it, I was supposed to test that motorcycle on a certain date. The night before I got that date, I got a call from the Human Fly people up north. And they said, have you tested the motor? Is the motorcycle down? And I said, yeah, I'm going to test it tomorrow. He says, under no condition do you test that motorcycle. Wow. And I says, wait a minute. I says, that's part of our deal. I says, what you don't understand is I don't know where the power settings on this thing is. Mm-hmm. He can hit the throttle, goes nowhere, or he's going to hit the throttle, he's going to be right off the back. He says, I don't care. We can't take a chance. I'm going, man, what's going here? Well, mm-hmm. Nevertheless, I'm not the kind of guy that listens to anybody anyway. So the next day, Tim Kesslick and I, we went over and we fired the thing. We strapped it inside of a Toyota pickup truck and fired it, you know. We knew pretty much where the levels was on it. All right. So now we're supposed to bring this. We're supposed to fly the motorcycle out. Also, I get a knock on the door again. Here's two guys from the Human Fly Spectacular, says, we're here to escort you. And I says, no, I'm flying there. Mm-hmm. He says, no, we can't take a chance of getting across the border, and you need to meet with the people who are running the big Coliseum. It was a big building that they actually held the Olympics in. Mm-hmm. Huge stadium. So we go up there, and we go to a place called Roma Meats. We don't go in the back door. The front door. We go in the back door. There's little people. They beat on the door. And
really?
I walk in and here's a table with people at the table. Let's just put it that way.
Right.
There was a character that was sitting there. He's going on. And his name was Bertri.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they says, who speaks Italian? Who speaks French? Who speaks English? Who speaks Italian? And so I had no clue what they were talking about. Mm-hmm. I was sitting there talking to this guy, Mercury, and I says, so what do you do? He's a big muscle head, you know. And I said, what do you do? He says, well, I make cement shoes. Now, I don't know. I just figured this guy is just kind of pulling my crank, you know.
Right.
I don't know what all that was about. I don't know what it's about, but they do know that I was not happy because they didn't make my deal where I was supposed to get my money at the airport.
Mm.
So when they left, they were leaving, and I walked over this guy, and I said, so do I get my money now? And he peels off a $100 bill. I said, here, go get something. Here, go here. I'll take care of you later on. And that's kind of the way they talk.
Right.
Well, we did. We were there for a long time, and they had Gloria Gaynor and Alma Faye Brooks were involved in this thing. This is back in the disco days.
Sure.
So we did a lot of PR through that town, and we did the radio and TV and all this. And I took some pictures and stuff with the human fly. You know, see, nobody ever knows who the human fly is. The guy's always got a mask on. I have no clue who that even is. Well, one day, there's some things I don't want to say, but there's things that I will say because I'm just going to repeat things there's still four people around there that still can verify my story. Let's just put it down.
Oh, really? Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, oh, yeah. There's still four around, yeah. So,
Is one of those Rick Rojat?
We'll get into that in a minute.
Okay.
We'll get into that one in a minute. So, I don't know exactly how to put this, but we went to a bar and with the hotel we were staying. Mm-hmm. And the bartender asked what we were doing here, and we told him we were involved with the Human Fly Spectacular. And basically, he was saying to us, and this is, again, do you know who those people are? And I says, no. And let me just tell you, they said some words that were not kind, but for the sake of the family and all of the business, I don't want to say what they were on there. But at that moment, I got a little scared about the money they still owed me.
Sure.
So I went up to my room, and I still had the calling card of the guy called up. And I says, you know, I've done every single thing that you have asked me to do. And you promised me every single day that you're going to get the money, give me my rest of the money. But I'm going to tell you this. You don't know me, but the next call you get from me is going to be for the Bahamas because I'm flying out tonight.
Hmm.
He says, Kai, stay there. I will be there. Bam, bam on the door. It wasn't a nice knock yet. He was a little excited. And he threw the money on the bed.
Was this with Joe Ramacheri? Or was it another member of the Ramacheri family? Or just some random person?
Yeah, I have the card. Yeah, I think it was a Ramacheri. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
This is a long time ago. Mm-hmm. I still have his card. He was in my finances. But anyways, he threw the money on the bed. And he says, don't you ever even think about leaving here tonight. Well, the next day, they pick us up and pull us out, taking us out in the limo.
Mm-hmm.
And we get to this place, it's cold, and I walk out and I look at the ramps. I'm going, what have they done with these ramps? Angle was wrong. The buses were supposed to have been all covered with plywood, and the receiving ramp was supposed to have been level. It was 8 feet up with X'd steel.
Oh, wow.
It was not level with the top of those buses. And I said, I'm not going to say what I thought was up now, but you can just put two and two together. Something's not cool.
Right.
Well, at this point, they come out and he says, well, what do you think? And I says, I don't think he's jumping here tonight. Well, that stirred up a whole bunch of stuff. We had a number of conversations. Now, those guys are getting a little scared. And I'll tell you who was there. It was Dar Robinson. It was Tim Keslick. It was Brenda Linder. It was Jim Deist, his wife, and me. All huddled in the middle of this deal.
Mm-hmm.
And the music is now over with. And I'm not going to someone told me to put fuel in the tank. Right. I said, I'm not going to do it.
And that was a hydrogen peroxide rocket.
Excuse me. Yeah, the 90%. And I'm the only guy that knows how to do it. I'm the only guy that knows how to run that motorcycle. At this time, the whole family, the whole bunch all came out there. And I said, what do we got to do? I said, start tearing that plywood up and make a receiving ramp on the other side. I mean, people are stumped. By the way, only about 1,500 people showed up. They spent, right. You know, they spent $100,000 in the production of this thing. It was unbelievable how many people showed up. And I have my reasoning to think why myself, and you figure that out. But anyways, so now they got this big, the drums are rolling. In fact, I got the production here. This whole thing on the, has a whole, how the whole show went and everything. I got it. Wow. It's all in here. I have everything. I don't throw away many things.
Yeah.
So anyways, the drums are rolling. Big pile of smoke comes out. Here comes the human fly. I want to tell you something. I don't know what he was on, but it was you'd look right through his eyes, like there was nothing there. He's just a daze. He says, "What do I need to do?" I said, "Sit on the motorcycle, hit the red switch up, and come on with the throttle." Mm-hmm. The guy never rode that motorcycle.
Oh,
and I don't even know if he could ride a motorcycle. Right. Well, thank God. He just came on the throttle really slow, you know, and he started coming out a little bit more and more and more. Instead of shooting this thing off the rock, he drove the thing, and that was the best thing he could have done. Because once it reached an apogee, the inertia was off, and the motorcycle went backwards. It went right through that plywood.
I've seen that video. It's
that
brutal.
Steel. Mm-hmm. And then I wouldn't bet a penny that this guy was alive.
Mm-hmm.
Then the fires, Prox guy got loose and starts some fires. Us guys all ran out of the stadium, went down, went to the airport, got a rental car, and went to New York.
Wow.
Waiting to see what we wanted to get. We wanted to get out of town.
Right.
So we picked up the newspaper down in New York. Here's one of us says, the human fly swatted.
Oh, wow.
And then whatever happened to the human fly. And is the story. It will kind of back up some of the things I just told you. Well, we came back home, and I'm back in Minnesota now, and I get a call from a guy, and he says, "You know, you saved my bacon." I says, "What?" I said, "You saved my bacon, Kai." I says, "Who is this?"
Mm-hmm.
"I'm the human fly." I said, "Oh, no, wow. What's your name?" He says, "Rick Rocek."
There you go. Yeah.
I says, "Did you know they had $1 million life insurance policy on you?" The first thing he said, "Did you know they tried to kill me?" And I said, "Did you know you had a million? Did you know they had $1 million life insurance policy?" They says, "Those bastards," is exactly what he said.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a person who sat right next to me when that phone call came in. So yeah. I'm just going to tell you it's the God's truth.
Yeah.
So you can put
that's
two
a, that's
and two
a pretty
together.
Serious idea there. I mean, that's some serious stuff.
So. Whatever's happened to the human fly, whoever Rick Rocek, maybe it was a part of the deal of the promotion that if, you know, maybe he might show up again, but, you know, it's been 40 years or now.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think Rick Rocek's going to be showing up anytime soon.
Right. Was that the last time you ever talked to him?
Yeah.
Well, and you didn't know who he was before then?
I asked him if I saw him, and they gave us a tour of the place there, and they were dumping these stuff into the mixers. He said that he was one of the guys there, yeah. But
oh,
I didn't really, yeah, a tall, slender guy. But
you
I
never
really
met him officially without the mask or anything like that.
No.
Yeah, they seem pretty serious about
we
that.
We had many press conferences with him
mm-hmm.
While we were there, and you know, took pictures of him. But as far as seeing him and who it was, no.
Wow. Do you think that he might have been the person who said he was the engineer who came to your house, or was that someone else?
Yeah, he didn't. Well, you know, it's a long time ago, okay?
Sure.
But the engineer came to my house. I did not recognize him as the guy that was working in the factory.
Right. So,
but I don't know if you've listened to some of the stuff on Facebook or mm-hmm. YouTube about it. Have you listened to that? You hear about where I believe it was his wife or one of the women saying that supposedly they beat him up when he was in the ambulance. I don't know if you found that.
No, I haven't seen that.
Look, it's in there. They were saying that, you know, he likes to brag, you know, about sure. him talking like he's a tough guy and stuff. And one of the other things he said, yeah, one thing about the human fly, you know, you could use anybody. You could just throw him in the river if you wanted to. Did you hear that? Okay.
I did. I heard okay.
Do a little more, read a few more, and then put two and two together. But right. I'm not going to make any accusations. I'm just going to repeat what I was told by others and by them.
Sure. One of the things that I heard was that the reason they wanted the human fly to be in a mask all the time was because that way they could always put someone else in the mask if they had to.
Exactly. I got a call from those guys. I worked on That's Incredible. We did 17 shows on there. And I got a call from one of the guys from up there. I can't remember off the bat.
Mm-hmm.
Told him how much he liked me and working with me and all that. Maybe we could do something. But the coolest thing is this. So after all these years, a motorcycle jumper calls me up and says, "Kai, can you build me a rocket-powered motorcycle?" I said, I'm not interested in doing any of that stuff. And a few days later, he calls me. He says, "I found a motorcycle." I says, "With a rocket." And I says, "What does it look like?"
Yeah.
"Well, it's got a black gas tank." And I says, "No." I says, "How many rocket motors does it have?" He says, "2. I says, "Is there a red tank on it?" He says, "Yeah." I said, "Oh, my God, who's got it? It's in traded car out in Florida." How it got to Florida, I'll never know.
Wow.
So I got on the phone. The guy was going to sell it. He said, "I got a buyer for $5,000. I says, "I will have $7,000 cash to you tomorrow."
Yeah.
"I want that bike." And I ended up with the motorcycle.
You sent me a picture of that. It's a beautiful-looking machine.
Yeah, it's only got 3 miles on it.
Still?
Harley-Davidson sent me the motorcycle. I drove it 1 mile. I pulled the engine out of it, sold it for $1,000, and then the human fly pushing it around 2 miles. That's only got 3 miles. It's in my collection.
Wow. That
I know,
amazing.
It's crazy. I mean, it's a crazy deal. The whole thing is crazy.
It is quite a story. I mean, I started out just kind of reading the comics and then finding out more about the whole backstory. And it is crazier almost than anything in the actual comic book. It is just so out there. What was your impression of the, you mentioned that you weren't even sure if he could drive a motorcycle.
Oh, I didn't know. I didn't know anything about him.
Yeah. I mean, what was your impression? Did he carry himself like a stuntman or like a daredevil? Did he seem to know what he was doing or just
I thought he looked pretty wimpy actually.
Really?
He was just tall, skinny guy. I don't know. They had this story that he was made out of steel and all this crazy stuff.
Right.
He was pretty good at bragging, though, I'll tell you that, man. He was pretty good at that. He had a good story.
I've seen some interviews, yeah, and, it's a lot of that was used for the comic book, that his family died in a car crash and his skeleton was replaced with steel and all that. But, if you look, there's someone left a comment once saying that she was Rick Riljatt's wife, and, obviously she wasn't dead. And just all sorts of things before that, before the car crash story. Apparently, he was telling people he was beat up by a gorilla.
Yeah, I didn't want to mention that one, but it was more than a gorilla. Not more than getting beat up by a gorilla. Oh, I've heard some crazy things, I'll tell you that.
Right.
Yeah, the story gets, well, there's like I say, there's things, there's more to that than what I've told you, but you've got the basic gist of it.
I mean, you mentioned before that the way the stunt was originally designed, that it was going to be probably fatal to whoever was on that bike. And that even the way it ended up going, there was going to be a crash. Did you?
He was going to crash because you couldn't stop on the other end. And,
right.
And Dar Robinson brought up an airbag and a net, if I remember right. Nobody, by the way, I'm the only guy got paid out of the bunch.
Really?
Not one of them got paid, only Kai, because he's a little bit smarter than the bunch. I played my hand when it was time to play.
Yeah. You mentioned that you as soon as the sun was over, you guys all left as quickly as you could.
Yeah, so, we jumped in a car, ran off the deal. I mean, because there's a reason, because there's things that I left out. Let's just put it, things are getting real hairy.
So did you see, were you around long enough to see that he actually survived the crash?
No, I couldn't believe it. No, right when when the crash, we were gone.
Yeah.
There's reasons that so I'll tell you off camera, but I won't tell you on camera.
So you were certain that he didn't make it, that he had died in the crash?
Oh, we thought he's dead for sure.
Yeah, why? Because, like I said, I saw a video of it.
No, he went right through that. Now, if we wouldn't have put that plywood, he probably would have been cut in half.
Wow. Wow.
You know, the plywood, he was with the plywood, and that plywood was what saved him. You know?
Wow.
Yeah, if I wouldn't have took a stand on that plywood, he wouldn't be alive.
My goodness. So were you, I mean, obviously you were surprised to hear from him afterwards.
Well, yeah, I still don't even know at that point, because we picked up that article that the human fly is swatted. And there was one other article I just grabbed that album.
How did that make you feel afterwards? I mean, did that change how you work with other stuntmen and daredevils, or did that just kind of solidify
well, I would
what
normally
you were already doing?
Yeah. Well, you know, I worked with Eddie Brown, you know, jumped over the Snake River a couple of years ago. I worked, you know, with Dar Robinson for many years. We did a lot of really cool stuff together, set many records. And there's some crazy people out there still, you know, that Mad Mike who just got killed in a rocket.
Right.
And we just did a series, Homemade Astronauts, which could have been really crazy.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, it seems it's an inherently dangerous.
I'm 84 years old. I'm still playing.
Well, I would never guess. What is it that you think is appealing to people about watching stuntmen and watching daredevils? And also, what do you think makes people want to do that?
Well, I don't know. It's kind of like, it's like a spinning saw blade. Don't touch it. I'm the kind of guy who touch it. Don't touch the hot radiator. I'm the kind of guy who's touching a little bit.
Right.
But, I don't know. I've got pictures of my great uncle coming off a ski jump in 1905 on a bike. That's how he put himself through college as a stuntman.
Wow.
And so I pretty much have got that in my blood, and the inventors and stuff are in my family. But it's in my blood. But, you know, I love the old barnstormers where they crash planes right into barns and take the wings off. And one of the things that really inspired me, probably the most that inspired me when I was a young kid, I had this book called The Collier Book of Wonders. And in there was a picture of a guy sitting on top of a rocket on a chair. And then it showed a picture of him laying on the ground, smoldering, and it says, and he lived to tell about it.
Yeah.
Well, the first thing I did is took my my bicycle and took my mom's ironing board and wired that bad boy on and tried to fly. And so that was my start of my career anyways. But
yeah,
that's wow. Kind of, and by the way, that guy, he ended up doing some other crazy things after he survived that deal. You know, I worked with Super Joe Einhorn. I promoted him, did a bunch of crazy stuff with him. And we built a gyro bike, and you know, I knew a lot of the stunt people that really, you know, good people, really good people, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, thrill seekers are a little bit different people.
Yeah. Did you ever do this, that sort of thing yourself also?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I jump cars, motorcycles, crash. I got lots of broken bones, brain concussions, prove it. Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, it's, you know, wing walked. You know, I did some fun stuff. Yeah.
Did you really? Wow.
Sure.
Well, that's fantastic. You know, obviously you felt, and do you continue to feel very comfortable with that crowd? I assume everyone knows who you are.
Yeah, they're pretty kind to me. Well, they know I've got some credentials. Let's just put it that way.
Right.
Yeah. We've done a lot of stuff. So they're pretty much, you know, even with Dar Robinson working with guys, with people's lives in my hands. I mean, you know, I'm lawyers. They got to trust me, I guess, with their life in their hands.
Right. So, what would you do if the human fly actually came out? If Rick Rojat came out and said, hey, it's me, I'm the human fly. Would that surprise you if he did that now? Or?
I don't think he's around.
No, you don't think so?
By now, he would have.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's no reason, because people are now, they're involved or passed away.
Right.
They were involved in that deal, they're gone. And the best of my knowledge, they are.
Yeah, I've always wondered about that. I mean, it's people get older, and you know, and that he didn't seem to be living the most safe lifestyle. So.
Yeah, I don't know what the relationship, if he owed those guys money, or if there's some kind of relationship there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whose idea was it? I've heard a couple different deals on that.
Mm-hmm.
But when he called me, he was pretty upset.
Yeah, I can imagine. The Human Fly International, as a company, is still around. They put out an independent comic book a few years ago. They've supposedly are working on a documentary. Have you been, has anyone approached you about working with that sort of
thing? Yeah, I mean, some people contact me from England. Yeah. I don't know if they're the same or not.
Right. Is that something you'd be interested in working on?
Sure.
Yeah.
It's an interesting deal.
Yeah. And I think you, from what you've shown me so far, I think you probably have the most extensive archive on the human fly so far.
I document everything I do. I document. Like I say, there's other people are still around, can back up every word I just told you.
Mm-hmm.
So I just left out a lot. Let's just put it that way without getting too deep into it.
Right. Right. Well, feel free to tell me whatever you want to say.
Well, no, I'm from a liability standpoint where, it's a standpoint where people, especially people are still in business and stuff. And, just best to keep that.
Sure.
Unless you want to talk to somebody else about it, they want to say something.
No, that's perfectly fine. You do whatever you are comfortable with is fine with me. So tell me a little bit more about the bike. Was that the first, that wasn't the first rocket cycle you made, was it?
No, I built before that, and I built rocket powered go-karts and stuff like that. But that thing had, that had so much power.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's like two 1,500-pound thrust motors. That's, well over 6,000 horsepower, early.
Right. Wow.
That's what they wanted.
Yeah.
It was overbuilt, but that's what they want.
That's kind of crazy because I saw that it had a top speed when the rockets were going of probably about 300 miles an hour.
Well, that's not accurate.
Oh, no?
He'd have to hit the ramp at 80 and stay on it for a little bit.
Oh, okay.
At that 36 buses that they were going to do. But he was going to hit a concrete wall at that point.
Right.
There's no way possible the thing would still be in the air. Bam, that would be the end of that deal.
You mentioned that he might have been impaired before the jump. Did he seem nervous about it at all, or was it just...
The way he looked at me, he was absolutely stoned.
Mm.
His eyes were just like straight needle point. He says, what do I do?
Right.
Sit on the motorcycle, hit the red switch up and twist the throttle. There's no time to get lessons.
Yeah, my goodness. And that's, you mentioned that there was no chance to rehearse or anything. And you were able to test it a few times, you said?
I fired it one time up Minneapolis when I strapped it in the back of my Toyota pickup.
Yeah, that must have been stressful for someone to get on a bike impaired that they've never been on before and just kind of.
Oh, that's about as gutsy as one could get, or a daredevil, or didn't care about his life, or he was a ex-Banzai pilot. Kamikaze pilot.
Right.
Never thought about that.
Wow. My goodness. Yeah, that's an incredible situation to find yourself in. Have you ever experienced anything else like that? Or was that kind of like the most intense situation?
Not with the same type of people I've been, but I've been around things where I chose not to get involved with. And on at least five occasions, I could think of four.
Wow.
But at least five, I said, if you do that, they're dead. Then guess what? They're all dead.
If you could go back now, knowing what you know, would you have gotten involved in this
stunt? Oh, what I know about everything? No. Mm-hmm.
Was it the stunt
when you make a deal with somebody and then you have to start begging for your money, mm-hmm. then things are not cool.
Right.
Not cool. And I know for a fact that Jim Deese didn't get paid. I know for a fact that Dar Robinson did not get paid.
How long were you there? How long were you there before the actual stunt?
I think for some reason, 9 days, 9 or 10 days.
Wow. So what were those 9 days?
We're supposed to fly right in, but we ended up driving up there, up to Montreal. It's 2 days that they driving, getting there. There's stuff that happened even on the way up there that I can't even talk about.
Well, you mentioned that you did a lot of PR and that sort of thing. What did you do once you were up there?
Yeah, all the radio stuff, whatever radio stations were in town, the newspapers, the TV, we did all that stuff. Yeah, all of them. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did you spend a lot of time with the Remicheries and with the fly himself, or?
Yeah. And the singers.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Not all of them, but different times we were with them, yes.
Wow, I'm trying to picture that scene where you have disco performers and a guy in a mask and a group of stunt people with their rocket cycle. That must have been something else.
Should have been in Ripley's, believe it or not, actually. Or some kind of zoo.
It sounds intense, but it also sounds like it's a good memory.
Well, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's cool. You know, I'm glad that he walked away from it. There's some articles. I think if my memory is right, and I'm pretty sure it's right, is they checked around the hospital and they found out that there was a different ambulance that none of the hospital's ambulance even took him there. He went in the different ambulance, I guess. Oh, wow. Private one.
Oh, really? Yeah, see, that's the thing about this whole human fly thing. The more you get into it, the weirder it gets. So in the community, in the stunt and Daredevil community, do people still talk about the human fly, or is that something that's been forgotten by most people now?
Yeah, no, I don't know. You know, once in a while, somebody's read something on Facebook about me, and it's fun. You know, but, you know, the stunt people don't look at the Daredevil people the same, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Daredevil, right. Community. Yeah, but, you know, the old timers, they all know about the human fly and a couple other deals and the Evil's Jump. And, you know, right. I put a bid on Evil's Jump and he turned me down. You know, at the time, I was building rocket. So in 73, 74, I was building rocket cars for $15,000 complete. That's the difference in our money now.
Right.
But he said, you can't do it for under $250,000, you know, and that was not true. But anyways, because I didn't, you know, so he went and, but he went with, you know, Bob Joyce, a sharp guy. He knows what he's doing and all that. They just had some parachute problems. And, you know, we were in charge of the recovery on this one that we just did. Have you seen that movie yet, by any chance?
Which one?
Stuntman. It's called Stuntman.
No, I haven't.
Oh, you should. It's on Disney Plus.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'll check that out.
Into my YouTube, you'll see us doing the jump on there. You know?
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'll do that. I was a big Evel Knievel fan when I was a kid. He was, you know, that was at like the height of his popularity and that.
Oh, yeah.
Thing.
Yeah, everybody was.
But I saw you, you and your son Buddy, I believe. You guys were able to work on a successful Snake River Canyon jump.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, we have the backup for it right in my shop here, right 50 feet from where I'm sitting. We got one.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
It's not a gantry. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. You mentioned that you have, well, I mean, you have the human flying motorcycle again. Where do you keep that? Is that on display or is that under
my living room right here?
Oh, really?
20 feet from me.
My goodness.
Yeah, I threw all the furniture out of my house years ago. It's all stuff that I built through the years. It's house in the museum. Yeah.
Yeah. That is incredible. That's awesome. Are there any other memories of that time, of that night that you'd like to share? Or
no, all the thing I remember was really cold in there and there weren't very many people in the stands. It's not here because most of the deals I'm involved with, there's a lot of people around me, you know. Mm-hmm. And, I'm really surprised at that. Disco was really a big thing at the time. And I mean, one heck of a promotion. I don't know how much money they spent. I heard one time well over 100 grand or something, which is a lot of money back then.
Yeah.
And 1,500 people showed up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's not much. If he had been successful, do you think the human fly would have had a longer career? Or was this something that was always kind of...
Oh, yeah. No. If you got to... You know, so just, you know, they did the wing walk thing on the plane deal. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I did that. I've wing walked some. Yeah, there's always next things. There's all kinds of crazy things you can do.
Right.
I mean, you know, if you listen to his interviews, I'm going to do this. You know, that's a whole bunch of BS. That ain't ever going to happen. I mean, but there's things that are real, that things that you can do. Yeah.
Right.
Really crazy.
Yeah. You know, Kai, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate you talking to me about this. This is a thrill for me. I'm really happy to be able to talk to you.
Well, it's my pleasure.
Thank you so much. Where can people find you? I've been going through your website. So
yeah, put my website up if you would for me. And then if you go to YouTube, KY, and then Michelson, I got a pretty good following in there. I post. I have 100,000 photos in my archive, so. I post new stuff in there just about every day.
Yeah.
Keeps it going, you know. Different stuff. Really blessed guy to be able to work out a lot of projects through the years.
Yeah, well, I have to tell you, I've spent the last couple of days just going through all your stuff. It's just amazing. You've had a spectacular career.
Well, appreciate that. And I'm going to keep it up as long as I can.
All right. Well, sounds good to me. Thank you so much, guys.
Take care now. Yep.
All right. The Death Defying Human Flycast is a proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. If you'd like to subscribe or leave a comment for the Human Flycast, you can do that on our website at fireandwaterpodcast.com or on Apple Podcasts. You can also find us on Twitter at twitter.com/FW Podcasts and be sure to tag the network with #FW Podcasts. The Death Defying Human Fly List, a playlist including all the music featured in each episode so far, can be found on Spotify, and I'll include a link to that in the show notes. If you'd like to support the Fire and Water Podcast Network even more, go to our Patreon page at patreon.com/FW Podcasts, where you can make a one-time or monthly contribution and unlock various rewards, including getting name-checked on this or any network show of your choice, just like Gord Tolton and David Ace Gutierrez. Support the network, reap the rewards. Thanks again, High Flyers, and remember, the wildest superheroes are real. Yeah.